when you dare to take a breath. Don't care about no medals on your chest. Your steely-eyed killer shadow in the night. You were born to fight. You gotta light 'em up.
Welcome to Straight Outta Combat Radio, audio medicine from Green Zone Hero. We're proudly American, unapologetically patriotic, and politically incorrect. We are the voice, the platform for transitioning veterans, honoring their stories and wisdom.
Save us all before they burn it down.
Welcome to Straight Outta Combat. I'm John Krotek, Army veteran.
Chris Hager, Gold Star father.
Our combat veteran guest is Eric Casares. Eric was actually married before he joined the Army, and there's an interesting story there. I know he'll get to that. But during his 9 years in the Army, he deployed multiple times to places like Iraq and Afghanistan as an infantryman in both the 82nd Airborne and also as a 7th Army Special Forces Green Beret. Eric was also a combat diver, JTAC. He'll explain to a little bit about that when we get to it. It was part of the Technical Surveillance Detachment at his ODA. For those of you who don't know what the ODA is, that's the Operational Detachment Alpha, and it's the primary fighting force of the Green Beret Special Forces element for the United States Army. Well, Eric was having so much fun in the Army, his wife was raising their three kids and earning her bachelor's and her master's degrees in accounting, along with attaining a CPA license working for a national CPA firm. That's great support there. What a person. I can't wait to talk about her. In 2016, Eric and his wife started Green Ledger CPA. And what their primary focus is to offer their services to small and mid-sized businesses only. A lot of startups, a lot of people trying to, you know, wade their way through the financial world and what to do with all those books. I know about those accounting courses in college and what a trip. But anyhow, welcome, Eric. I'm here with Gold Star father, Chris Hager, and we want to hear your story.
Yeah, thanks, John. That was a great intro. And Chris, it's fantastic to talk to you. I've looked up on your guys' history and your stories, and, you know, unbelievable what you guys have been through and what you've accomplished to this point.
You're
so
very
I appreciate
kind.
You bringing me on.
No, you're very kind. It is maybe not in the background. I do have degrees in finance, accounting, and economics, principally an economics degree. So I can commiserate with your wife and you.
What's your wife's name? What's her name?
Yeah, her name is Rebecca.
Good for her. So I don't speak accounting language. I think I got C's when I was in college, which wasn't real great. But ledgers and all those kinds of things.
I'll tell you one quick story, and then we'll let you talk. But I have to share this. Back 100 years ago, I used to design corporate retirement plans. Mm-hmm. And you deal with businesses. I created the first profit-sharing plan where the contribution was used Peterbilt trucks. 1978.
You're dating yourself, brother.
I know. Wow. But I made a profit sharing plan for a truck company, and his contribution was used Peterbilt. Pretty creative stuff in those days.
I'm learning and more about you all the time. But anyhow, so, you know, let's get started. Eric, you know, tell us about growing up. Tell us about your household. What was that all about?
Yeah. My household was, it was interesting. My father, you know, he has a sister and a brother, and his dad was a World War II vet, was a bomber over in France, and his uncle was also a World War II vet in the infantry. And I think that, you know, the military, the call to service to be a part of this country the way that, you know, for what it gives us and what opportunities it provides us has always been something in my family to give back. And to basically say, I appreciate this opportunity that we have and let me fight for it a little bit. And so with that mindset, he was in the Air Force in Vietnam, and he only did about 4 years. And when he got out, he got into software with oil companies, and then eventually with Computer Associates and other companies such as that. And so he, where his whole family stayed in the Southern California area, he was always traveling, traveling to make a difference, make an impact. You know, he became one of the only guys in his entire company that was an expert at this new software, this new emerging software. So he was always tasked to travel and train the rest of the company on it and go overseas and train other departments. And so I was in a family that was similar to kind of like a military brat where we moved around a lot. I actually spent 4 years of my childhood in Saudi Arabia. We lived in Riyadh, and then we spent a year in Bahrain. So we lived there, and then I spent time in other states, you know, California, North, South Dakota, Colorado, San Diego, and the Anaheim areas. And, you know, so to me, the changing and the moving and the striving to be better and the striving to do great things has kind of been in my family.
Awesome. And, so you graduated from high school in California?
Yeah, I did. I graduated. I actually live in the same place now where I went to high school. That's how much I like this area. When I got out of the military, it was where in the country would I want to live? And that this is the spot.
Talk about full circle. That's about as full circle as you can get. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you have any brothers? Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yep. I've got two sisters and a brother. My brother also is a vet. He served 4 to about 98, that time frame. He was in Ranger Bat. And he, you know, we used to talk. I used to talk about how he was so cool because he was a Ranger. And he would say, yeah, well, I don't have a combat patch. So those were some of our conversations.
Wow. And you know how those Rangers are. That's hardcore training. You know, I've read a few books on those guys. Plus, I just interviewed an Army Ranger.
Well, and my sons had the battle because my middle son's a lieutenant in the Coast Guard and his brother was a NCO. And of course, NCOs have the highest respect for officers.
Yeah.
So you got out of high school. So you're in Southern California, moved around a lot, you know, got to see a lot of things, well-traveled before you're even, you know, 18 years old. And dad serves Vietnam, other relatives serve country in World War II. And what are you doing, man, when you get out of high school? Are you off to college? What's Eric up to?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I was really big into sports. You know, I like to say that I had a dream to play in the professional NBA, and I had a friend who actually, we played together, and he actually did go to the NBA. His name was Chase Budinger, and interesting, the way we grew up, he ended up becoming 6'7", and I stayed the same height since middle school. You know, it became pretty clear that I wasn't going to be a professional athlete, at least in the basketball arena. But I was also, our family was also really big into faith. We were big into church. And for me, it was interesting. I decided, you know, if I'm not going to play basketball, I might as well go do something where I'm giving back to other people or doing the right things. And there was actually a program at a school in North Carolina that they called it Special Forces for them, missions training. And it was actually headed up by a professional survivalist and a third Special Forces group soldier who was currently active duty at the time. And they built a year-long program where it's built pretty much like the Army Green Beret pipeline. It's similar, not exactly, but similar based off of that guy's experiences.
Right.
And I said, you know what? I think I want to do that. That sounds cool. And so I did. I went and moved to North Carolina, right out of high school and started attending the school and attended the course. And that course is actually where I met my wife. I met her when we did our first, it was supposed to be a 70-mile hike through the Appalachian Trail, but it only ended up being 30 miles. And that's where we met.
So she was in the survival school too?
Correct.
Awesome, yeah. Man. Awesome. So
yeah, that school was if you were going to marry somebody, you would know by the end of it.
If it was going to work or not, right?
That's so cool.
So you're thinking, man, this lady can do 70 miles. That's my kind of gal.
Yeah, I'm thinking that I don't care much about the, put on pretty makeup and act the part and say the right words and you know, I don't know, try to show off to other people. I got to see her at her worst and see how she dealt with very difficult and physical situations. And we realized that we actually worked really good as a team. Before we decided to, you know, do anything romantically. And I think that kind of confirmed it. I mean, as soon as we decided that maybe we should do something together, we got married within 2-3 months after making that decision.
That's so cool.
Yeah, definitely something I wouldn't advise other people to do.
Well, why not?
It's funny. I think that's a question I get a lot about our, my wife's and mine experiences is the way we got married, you know, the way I joined the military, the way we had kids, the way we, I did deployments and got out and we run a business together and all those things. It's, if anything, it's a recipe for failure, not for success. And so that's why I look back at the course we did, the year long course. And I say, this is what solidified us being good for each other is we did this, these events, these really difficult things together and pulled ourselves through them. And marriage is the same way. It's a series of difficult events that you need to work at and be dedicated to, not the, you know, the gushy, oh, you're so cute and I love you phase, but the more like, this is an actual, you know, something we need to work at and, you know, to always continue to be getting better at.
That is so cool. As Chris says, you know, that's good training right there. And what great advice already. We're just, you know, a few minutes into our discussion here. But so you realize a lot of things about Rebecca and what happens. You guys get out of this course and life takes its course and you're obviously proving a lot of people wrong.
Yeah. It's funny. I spoke at a veteran event locally here a couple weeks ago and I showed some pictures of asking people why they joined the military. And for me, it was every time I went into church or something of that nature, it was a bunch of people praying for the troops and asking others to pray for the troops. And it always bugged me because inside I'm thinking, well, I'm a capable young athletic man. Shouldn't I be joining the military, not just praying for them? And I'd ask people, I would say, so how long have you been praying for the troops? And is anyone here going to actually become a soldier or, you know, join the military and actually do something about this thing that you think is a problem? And a lot of people would just kind of, you know, shy away or they wouldn't answer. It just became a mute conversation. And that always bugged me. So as soon as we got married, it's funny, we got married and she got pregnant immediately on the honeymoon, which at the time I was not happy about. I'm sure maybe some people can understand as a 19-year-old kid, you know, I wanted to have fun. I didn't want to be a dad.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that for the probably the first year or 2 years of being a dad, I was not a good dad. I was not a good husband. I was a jerk. My wife probably should have left me if anything, if it wasn't for me going into the Army. You know, she got pregnant and I said, I can't do this. I have to join. And I joined while she was pregnant. She gave birth while I was in airborne school. And then as soon as I got to my unit, I went to Iraq for 13 months. And I think if it wasn't for that deployment, which is backwards from what happens with most people, but for us, if it wasn't for that deployment, we probably wouldn't be together.
What year was that, Eric, when you your first deployment?
That was in 2009.
And that was with the 82nd?
That was with the 82nd, correct.
And how was Rebecca feeling when you got deployed?
I don't know if she even knows how she was feeling. It wasn't something that we've experienced before. And it was all a whirlwind for her because it was the decision to join. It was, you know, basic training almost immediately. I was gone for 5 months because I went from basic training to airborne school and then, you know, to brag and into my unit. And it was such a whirlwind that when I got to my unit, they said, hey, we're deploying. for her, it was probably a whole mix of emotions that I can't even begin to understand.
So your oldest was born? Who's that?
His name is Jaden. Yeah, he was born in 2008 in May. And then, so I actually did, there was actually a gap. I didn't deploy immediately, but there was a little bit of a gap. She got pregnant immediately after he was born. And then she gave birth.
Hold it, there's a pattern going on here, Eric.
There is.
Airborne!
Well, now wait a second. I have to interject here just a moment, there if I may. So he was born in 2008?
Correct.
My youngest was born December 1st, 2008.
There you go.
Small I'm world. 66 and have an 8-year-old. You're probably not.
You're a couple years older than me.
So you think...
There's no mystery there.
On the one hand, that it was 19-year-old having someone... having a wife give birth, and I was a 58-year-old having a wife give birth.
There's a correlation there, actually, when you think about it.
There's some kind of truth there.
Yeah. I would say at least you had a little bit of, you had some experience and more maturity. In some respects, I feel bad for my oldest son because, you know, I have a 2-year-old boy right now, and I know for a fact I treat him differently based on my experiences and just growing up, becoming an adult as opposed to a child.
Yeah.
And,
not a great dad in 1977 either.
See, I had it differently. I married a lady with 2 kids already from another marriage. So, you know, I had a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. I missed all that fun stuff, right, guys?
Yeah. Well, hey, I did too. So my wife would always get mad at me because she said, well, you have a kid and you leave.
Duty calls.
I left. I made it a point that I would pull the child out of my wife, every kid we had. And I did. And I actually flew home from Iraq somehow to pull my daughter out. But after they were born, I was always gone. So my last 2, I was in Iraq for my daughter, and I was in Afghanistan after the birth of my third kid. And, you know, my son, my first son, it was a whirlwind of joining the military and just always being gone initially anyways.
What'd you see in Iraq? What was going on there, your first deployment?
It was interesting because it brought back a lot of memories from my childhood of living in Saudi Arabia. And it's kind of cool because now I have the experience of this is what it's like to be a civilian in the Middle East, kind of amongst people that, you know, you're not there to fight and they're not there to fight you necessarily. And then now I'm there amongst the same type of people, except my whole job is to kill people. And it was definitely a different and surreal experience. You know, we started out in Anbar, or my whole deployment was in Anbar in Iraq, and we replaced a Marine unit that was there. And we went straight into Fallujah for the first couple months out of the base Al-Taqaidum, or we call it TQ. And then after that experience, I went home. That's when I went home for my birth of my daughter. But when I came back, we were actually further north near the Syrian border, where I stayed for the rest of my deployment. And we were just in a little fire base with a SEAL team, and that was it. And there was no one else around us for hours, driving-wise, anyways.
So remote base then.
Yeah, very remote. I can tell you one thing that always made me upset was every time a cool mission came down the pipe, we would prepare to go and then the SEALs would just take off and do it. And that used to always make me pretty mad. You know, looking back, it makes sense. You know, I got to do the same thing when I was deployed in an ODA. So I got to see it from both ends of the spectrum.
So how did you make it to the ODA? I mean, how did you go? What was the hop from 82nd? Did you ETS, or you just re-enlisted for special forces?
Yeah, you re-enlist. They do a special re-enlistment. Basically, that what it does is if you don't make it through selection, it kind of goes away. You don't have to commit to the re-enlistment. But if you do make it through selection, then you have to commit. And I think from what I remember, it's either an extra 4 or 5 years. And so you have to have 4 or 5 years on the back end to serve in the unit. And so what I did was based on working with SEALs in Iraq, you know, having a third special forces group guy lead me before I joined the military, I was like, I need to do that. I'm a go-getter. I want to go out and make a difference. I want to go out and you know, if I can be the first guy to shoot somebody as the first person in an area, that's where I want to be. That's the kind of person I am. And at the time, like I felt like I was going to do that in the 82nd, and then I wasn't. And so if I'm not going to do it in the 82nd, I'm going to go on an ODA and I'm going to do it there. And so I did. I went and tried out. And the funny thing is, the 82nd hates guys leaving. They don't like guys going that route. And so I got the blacklist treatment. And so there was no turning back. I had to get picked up. I had to get selected. I had to go to the Q course because for me, anyways, at that level, at a young specialist.
How old were you? How old?
I was 20. Well, maybe 21. I'm not sure. It was around that time.
So you came back to the States to go through selection. What was that like?
That wasn't bad. I trained for it when I got back. We had our 30 days of leave after deployment, and I spent the whole 30 days training. It was a little interesting. I got to selection and realized people didn't train the way I did, and maybe I took it a little too far, but I had my wife. She would – at random times on the calendar, and she would wake up at 2 a.m, 4 a.m, you know, 6 p.m. right during dinner. She would say, you got to go do a 10-mile ruck, throw on your ruck and go. And that was basically my training. I would walk on our asphalt outside in the summertime with my bare feet, toughen up my feet. Because I heard that basically you just need to have tough feet and be able to walk with a lot of heavy stuff on your back. And you do that, you'll be fine. And so that's the way I trained. And by the time I got to selection, it was a breeze. I didn't. It was tough. Don't get me wrong, but.
You had the right mindset and you were prepared for it. That's pretty cool, man. That Rebecca had a lot to do with your training too. That's pretty.
Yeah, she was still in the mindset from the course we went through together. So she was all about it. She was excited. She was excited to be the drill sergeant, you know, and be telling me what to do.
Does she do CrossFit too? Did she? You said something about CrossFit. Were you doing CrossFit or any of that?
She did. She did at one point, but you know, she's been on and off, you know, with all the degrees and all the certifications she's been getting and all the kids she's been having. It's been hard to stay in the groove of an exercise platform. And so that is the goal. Our goal is to be consistent in exercise. We want to be those guys in our 80s where we're riding skateboards down the street still, if that makes sense.
That's an awesome goal. I wish we all had that. So you get your Green Beret, you go through the assessment course, the selection, and you get to wear the Green Beret, and then what happens?
Yep, I show up to my unit. They put me on a team. I also learned Posh 2 and the course, and I wanted to go to 7th Group because I knew 7th Group was primarily deploying to Afghanistan along with 3rd Group. And I showed up and said, hey, I'm here. I speak Posh 2. I know our battalion's going to Afghanistan. Where can I be? Where can I fit in? Like, where do you guys need someone like me? And come to find out that there are still some big army things at play. And they say, well, we have a slot that needs to get filled on this one special team that just happens to be going to South America. And I kind of just was taken aback. I didn't really understand. And I was like, well, do you need Pashto speakers in Afghanistan? And no, we just need you to go to it was Central America. We need to go to Honduras. Like, okay. So I went and learned Spanish and then we went and did our you know, pre-deployment rotation for a month. And then we took off to Honduras. That was what it was like when I first stepped in the door.
So that mission in Honduras was a hell of a lot different than Afghanistan. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's different and it's the same, in some aspects. But you know, it was interesting when I first walked in, maybe a couple of days, they said, hey, we got slots to go to dive school. Do you want to go? And I remember I made maybe one of the biggest mistakes. I said dive school. I don't even know what, you know, I didn't know what that was. And they said, someone explained it to me. And I said, well, if I wanted to be a SEAL, I would have been a SEAL. I lived in San Diego. And
ooh, that's not a good thing to say.
That wasn't the right thing to say.
No.
So what happened? So was it tougher on you in scuba school after that, or
dive school's hard? It's the hardest school in the military. It's got the highest attrition rate out of any school, out of any branch in the military. What they call BUDS for SEALs is the same thing as the dive school for the rest of the military. Air Force, Marines, Army go to dive school, and you know, the Navy go to BUDS, but it's ran by the same program. And
never knew that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Some people talk about it, some people don't. Maybe that's the difference. You know, for me, it was extremely difficult because I had no prior training. It was a punishment, really. They said, oh, you're the new guys. We're going to throw you into this because it's basically a punishment. Nobody passes, or at least not a lot. And to surprise me and another guy, we're both new guys, to surprise the people who sent us, we actually did pass the pre-qualifier stage and went to dive school, and nobody expected that. And then I actually did fail my first time in dive school. You know, but like anything else, I called my sergeant major that day and said, hey, I failed. I want to come back immediately the next class, which was in 30 days. And he basically said, nobody's ever asked to go back. So absolutely, you come home, train, and head right back. Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was it's a tough school, but it's totally and completely worth it. I trained on that one thing I had trouble with, and I blew through it no problem, and I didn't have any troubles the rest of the time there, and I got to actually use the experience to learn and get good at the job. So that was great. It was a good time, as much as it can be.
Yeah. So when you got done with Honduras and dive school and all those things in Central America, so you went back to Afghanistan?
No, I if I can remember correctly, we came back from Honduras. dive school, and I just started the team life is different than conventional life. It's, you know, how can we make our team desirable and an asset to the battalion so they can use us, you know, for different mission sets, for different locations. And so I was the volunteer. People would tell me, hey, don't ever say no to a school. Don't ever say no to training. Just go for it. And so I did. I went and tried to get every training under the sun so I can become an asset to the team. And so I spent a lot of my off time between my Honduras rotation and then the following Afghanistan rotation going to schools. That's where I became a JTAC, where, you know, the guys that talk to aircraft and drop munitions. And I became a technical surveillance detachment guy on the team, where I went to a course to learn how to do all sorts of fun stuff, you know, and a lot of that revolves around, you know, the SF side of things, you know, the underground and working on the human side of your missions as opposed to just the running and gunning. You know, so that was a lot of fun. So our team built up these skill sets. And then when Afghanistan came through the pipe, we were given the number one position in the battalion, and we were allowed to pick our mission and do what we wanted to do in Afghanistan. And that worked out. It's great. You know, we got to speak with General Reeder, who was in charge of U.S. forces, or at least soft forces over in Afghanistan at the time. I think he would speak to us maybe once a month, come down to the fire base and making sure we're doing what we need to be doing. And that was a good experience.
This is Straight Out of Combat Radio. With me today is Chris Hager, my co-host, Gold Star father, and Eric Casares, United States Army Special Forces and 82nd Airborne, telling us his story about training and travel and kids. And, you know, it's really a great story. So keep going, Eric. Tell us more.
Yeah. The people that I guess I could take a step back to answer some of the hitting points you wanted me to get to earlier is a lot of people look at the military who've never been in it and don't know what it's all about. And they think everyone is Rambo, I guess. They think everyone is out there shooting a gun and kicking in doors and we're all cruel and evil and whatever, you know, whatever they see in the movies. And it's funny because maybe 1% of the entire military is actually people that are out doing patrols and actually shooting guns. The military is really similar to the civilian world. There's people that do finances. There's people that do paperwork. You know, there's people that do all sorts of things, logistics and
there's doctors and lawyers and all that.
Yeah. Lawyers and tons of doctors. There's all the jobs you can think of in the civilian world. They have them in the military.
Truck drivers.
The military is a great opportunity to get trained on a skill, get trained on a trade, basically for free, and then get out of the military and be able to do that effectively as a civilian. A lot of people don't see it that way, but that's a lot of the training you can get in the military, you can't get in the civilian side of things without a lot of money.
Let me go back to one thing you said, Eric, because it I've been kind of doodling on my pad and it came up. When you said you were in church and people had said they've been praying for your military and you ask, you know, okay, I've been praying. Should I do something else? I'll never forget April after my son was killed. I was driving down the street with my wife in Sarasota, and there were all of these protesters on the corner saying, you know, Bush lied, people died, stop the war, all that stuff. And I looked at her and I said, do you think I can ask them a question? She said, well, don't get in a fight. I said, okay. So there's all these people in this line chanting and all that. And I said, excuse me. Does anyone know someone who's served? And the four-letter words came out, and nobody did. They didn't even know anyone who had served.
Yeah.
But they're protesting.
Something wrong with that picture.
That's the divide that we talk about between a population at peace and a military at war. And we're trying to bridge that gap. And that's what's so exciting to have somebody like you on our show, is you're talking about those bridges, the skill sets that you can take from the military into civilian life. That's a bridge. And our population still isn't clear that that's true.
Yeah. You know, and I think this is a topic you can go on for days talking about. It is a little unfortunate. And, you know, we've turned into a population that continues to ask what the government can do for us. But we forget, you know, that the government isn't this like mystical thing that's just out there taking care of us. It's people just like you and just like me who are doing a job that takes care of you and allows for you to have the opportunity to make your own choices, whether they're good ones or poor choices. And, you know, it's kind of sad that there's just a lot of takers in our current populace, and there's not a lot of givers. You know, the thing that I always look back on is Spartans back in the day, and something that they did was they had a society where the citizens of Sparta were regarded on high above everyone else, because the only way to gain your citizenship in Sparta was to serve in their military. And I don't know if I have it correct, but it's something in regards to, it's something like 8 years. You had to serve as a Spartan soldier for 8 years, and then you gained your citizenship. And with the citizenship, you had all the rights that, you know, for example, we have as citizens in America. And there was a lot of respect for that society from those individuals, whether they were citizens or not.
That's a great point.
That's something I always think about.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I used to run trips down to South America. We did high altitude climbing trips. We'd come back. And of course, my wife and I, like, you know, Rebecca and you, we ran our own small business. And it used to just really drive me nuts where somebody would come in, a customer, and would have a rough time figuring out the color of their socks. And I used to think to myself, you know, just get a pair. You know, they're just going to keep your feet warm, and nobody's going to see them anyways when you're at 20,000 feet. And, you know, we do. We take so much for granted, and there's a lot to be said to being a United States citizen. You know, what was your homecoming like when the uniform finally came off?
It was actually quite interesting because you said uniform comes off. When I was on a team, I rarely wore my uniform. So actually putting it on was the weird part.
What were you wearing? What were you wearing over there?
At home, we would only wear a uniform if we had to go, you know, talk to the battalion commander for whatever reason, or if we had a big event. Maybe there was a ball, or maybe there was, I don't know, something special that was going on where we all congregated together. Maybe a memorial or something of that nature. That's when we would put the uniforms on. But for the most part, if we didn't need to, we didn't. In Afghanistan, we just wore what the local guys were wearing. So if we went out with our ANASF Special Forces guys, or we went out with the Afghan commandos, they would wear BDUs, and so we wore BDUs. If we went out with the Afghan police, they wore DCUs, so we would wear DCUs. So we never actually wore the Army actual uniforms.
What's a DCU?
The DCU, that's the desert. If you think back to like Desert Storm and Desert Shield, the brown and the tan camouflage uniforms.
Yeah, the first camo, really, for desert.
Yeah, and then the BDUs, if you have some young listeners, those were the probably better uniforms. They were the green, the original ones you see in a lot of the movies, and the green camouflage. And we try to stay away from all that digital stuff. That stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't – never made any sense.
It's interesting. They're still using some of that too, aren't they?
Yeah, they're transitioning now to multicam, so that was great. Once they finally made that decision, we were all over it, so – we didn't have any issues with multicam. So that was a good decision. Finally, it only took about 10 years.
That's interesting. So you come home, Rebecca's got, you know, pretty close, darn near a PhD. She's raised these children who you've seen, somewhat intermittently, I guess, but you know, what's that like? What's it like? You finally come home, you go out to California, and we'll learn more about your business. But what was that like? How did you feel finally making your way back to California?
That was weird, but I will take a step back. I will say that normally most people in my shoes, when you're in combat, you're excited. You're getting in the helicopter, you're getting in the truck, and you're amped up. You're ready to just step off the bird and just start shooting. And that's the way it should be. Like that's the way, you know, teams are effective with those types of mentalities in place. It got to the point in Afghanistan where, you know, we had some unfortunate incidents happen with people from our group or people we worked with. And it got to the point where I was stepping off the helicopter, and all I would do is think about my kids. You know, we would be walking through the villages, and we would be doing whatever we had to do. And I would be thinking about my kids, and I'm like, dang, you know, what if, like, I just had a third one, and he's little, he doesn't even know who I am. And I haven't even been in my kid's life the last 9 years. You know, I had so many colleagues or so many peers who were getting towards their retirement, you know, getting towards their 20 years, who were all divorced. Most of them didn't, you know, they weren't the primary caretaker of their children. Their children didn't really even know much about them because they're always gone. And for me, if I did the math, that means when I retired, my kids would be in college. And I'm thinking, you know, that's not the life I'm, you know, here as a father with my obligations. That's not what I'm supposed to, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, they need to have a father and they need to have someone in their life. And in that regards, I have in a way failed them, even though I've been serving my country. And that's another conversation that I've had with other people of I am a believer that when you go one way, you miss out on something. You know, if you're, you know, working really hard in one direction, there's always something that you didn't do. You know, if I spent all year becoming a great soldier and deploying, well, then there was some time I didn't spend with my kids. And I think, unfortunately, that's the way a lot of things are. And so to me, my decision was, this is it. When I get home, I'm going to figure out my transition plan. I'm going to get out and I'm going to be there for my kids. So at least the next 10 years, they know who I am.
So how was that? You know, your wife was, you know, Rebecca was laying the groundwork. How was that? So you get back, what was your plan?
Well, my plan was twofold. I, like any good military person, I had a PACE plan, you know, primary, alternate, contingent, emergency plan. And the primary plan was, I actually was, if you think about it, it's kind of a little ridiculous, but I actually was running a business with my dad. He started a web design company in 2011. And on my time off or some free time at night, I would help him with the business. I would work on websites and I would work with clients on some marketing campaigns and things like that. So for me, my number one plan was, I'm going to get out and just run the web design business full time. You know, and my backup plan was, I am going to I'm going to go to school and get degrees in network security. And then I'm going to, you know, go get some internships with some companies. And then my other backup plan after that was, well, no, you know what? I think that was it. So,
well, at least you had a plan, you know?
Yeah. Well, the web design business was making money and it was working. So I didn't feel I didn't feel like I was getting out and kind of starting over. I knew one thing was for sure. I wasn't going to go into contracting. I wasn't going to go to Afghanistan as a civilian contractor. I wasn't going to train guys in the States as a contractor. I just won't. If I was going to get out of the world, I was going to get out of the world. I wasn't just going to keep doing it, even though I'm a civilian.
Well, that's a great way of looking at it. You know, so you have this plan, you come back. We want to hear more about Green Ledger, but you know, if you a couple of things here, Eric, if you want, what can you, you know, let the non-veteran American population know about, or what do you want them to know about combat veterans, military in general, but also your brothers and sisters that are still coming back from having been in combat? What would you want them to know? And then, you know, let's hear more about Green Ledger and you know, what that's all about with Rebecca.
Yeah. So first, for the people that don't really understand the community, I can tell it in a story. I was working with a video production company in Dallas earlier this year, and the guy told me that he told me some stories about veterans and how they were at a bar and they got into a bar fight. And he was like, his word of advice was, don't pick a fight with a vet, a combat vet, because most people, when they fight at the bar, they fight to prove a point. But when you fight a combat vet, it's like they're fighting to kill you. And so that was kind of his, but what he was saying is, I think in many regards applicable to the business world, is, you know, you have people that maybe are talented and they can come out and do something special, but you have these veterans who have had discipline instilled in them, and they've had the concept of get something done, you know, complete the task, complete the mission. And so when they get out of the military and you put a challenge in front of them, they're not going to look at it and dissect it and say, well, this looks kind of hard, maybe I won't do it. You know, they do the opposite. They will take that challenge and objective and they will go out and they will stay up all day long, stay up all night long and get it done. And they're going to do a dang good job. They're going to have those skills that a lot of newer, you know, younger generations don't have. The work ethic, right, discipline, the ability to be on time, the ability to, I don't know, wear the proper outfit to work. I think it's unbelievable how many people don't understand why they can't get a job, yet they're dressed like they're not dressed professionally. and they don't conduct themselves professionally, and they don't speak professionally. And a lot of military, the military really kind of ingrains that into you, is dress professionally, speak professionally, act professionally. And when you say you're going to do something, you do it. That's what I would tell the people that maybe don't understand veterans or who's coming out of the military. For the guys coming out of the military, my brother gave me some of the best advice. So my brother, when he came, got out, you know, he was a Ranger. He didn't know what he was doing, blew all his money, spent a few years just kind of doing the dance of depression and not really understanding what, you know, he could apply his skill set to. Right. And now he's a network architect with Salesforce. And he told me the number one thing that you're going to have issues with is the way you communicate with civilians. And he's like, if you can just figure out how to communicate the right way to civilians, then you'll be fine. Because the way you talk in the military and the way you talk to the people underneath you in the military, that's not okay when you get into the civilian populace. So his advice was, you need to still figure out how to accomplish the same thing, but how to say it better or how to say it more effectively to somebody who's not in the military.
And that's some good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. That was some of the best advice. And obviously we spoke more often to just kind of help me, you know, if I want to yell at somebody, what would I do instead? And you know, we talked about that, but,
Chris yells at me all the time, you know.
Well, and you deserve it.
I probably do.
Hey, when it's vet to vet, it doesn't matter, right?
I mean, that's right.
That's true. We can deal with some of that. You know, but you know what? Before you get to Green Ledger, tell us about Served. I know you're with a nonprofit and you're doing a lot of great work there. Tell us about that, and then we'll get into your chosen profession with your business partner.
Sure. So Served actually was great. I attended a Patriot Boot Camp. For those who don't know it, Techstars, they started a nonprofit called Patriot Boot Camp, and it's like a mini 3-day accelerator for veteran-owned entrepreneurs, or veteran, basically entrepreneurs that either run a business or are thinking about running a business, so like a startup founder. And they pull this group together, do it twice a year in a couple different locations, and they provide resources and basically the opportunity to take your concept or your small company and give you the resources to make it a reality. That's where I met Raf, and Raf is the guy who has started Served, SRVD.vet. And for him, he started it because he was in the military. Now he works for NASA, and he wanted to give back and give something to the community, because even though he was kind of a corporate worker, he still had that spark of entrepreneurial spirit in him. And so Served initially was started as a brand identity for those of us that have served and moved on. What we've started doing recently is we've been in communication with Bobby Henlein, which you know, John, out of that helps run Bravo 748 with Jamie.
That's right.
The Speakers Bureau. And they pulled me aside at the Military Influencer Conference where we met a couple weeks ago and said, hey, we really like what you're doing with Served. We understand the concept of it because our goal is to collaborate with apparel for veterans. And so they were asking, can you make specific clothing apparel for people like Bobby that have, you know, they're amputees or burn victims, things of that nature. And so currently right now, that's what we're working on, is prototyping clothing apparel for amputees and basically people just like Bobby. But right now we're working with Bobby. So he's going to be our first user.
That's some great work. Excellent. You know, I know that, you know, we met in Dallas at the Military Influencer Conference, the first one. And you know this, Eric, there was such an aura, such a buzz there. I know you and I didn't sit down and talk much. We traded cards and we traded a few pieces of paper and high five, but you know, there was such a buzz there. That was a great conference. A lot of great, great veterans and just a good energy there. I know you agree.
Absolutely. I think that event, if you're a veteran and you are starting a business or you're on the brink of doing that, you need to go. That is, I would say from now on, that is the event for veterans in the business space. That's the event to go to. Absolutely.
Couldn't agree with you more. So Green Ledger, CPA.
Green Ledger is awesome. When we moved here, I was running my small web design business. My wife, I encouraged her to start doing accounting on her own. I was like, just start freelancing. And as you bring in clients, we'll form a business around it. And because she had years of experience of what she thought were problems within the CPA industry. And I have experience working with CPAs and accounting firms as a business owner on my side of the house. And after that year of her kind of starting her own thing, we realized this is a real concept. It's a real business that we're making here, and it's solving a very, very big need. Now, web design was great, but I looked at the two and said, you know, there's a dime a dozen design companies, and I'm not necessarily the best. I knew that. I hired out people, but I wasn't making waves in the industry. But I looked at what we were doing with the accounting firm and saw this is going to fill a huge gap that isn't there right now. And that gap is the small business gap. There's a lot of CPA firms, a lot of accounting and bookkeeping firms that aren't set up to really take care of small businesses the way they should, mainly because they've been working, mainly because they make a lot of money. The CPA and accounting industry makes the most net profit out of any industry in the entire country. What a lot of people would say is if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Right.
But I looked at that and said, yeah, it's working and the CPA firms are making money and the people on the top are doing great. But people internally hate working at these companies. If you've ever talked to an accountant, they'll tell you, I'll go work for the Big Four for my first couple years so I can throw it on my resume, but I'm getting the heck out of there because nobody likes working for those companies. It is not a fun environment. It's not a healthy internal environment to work at these large firms. And on the other side of the house, businesses, there's always issues. My CPA doesn't understand my business. They're not business savvy. They don't really get what I'm saying. Why do they only see me once a year? Why do they always charge me for a 30-minute phone call? And where do these bills come from? Just so many things that we were experiencing that we said, you know what, we can fix this. So we took actually 2 months off of getting any new clients or anything of that nature and just rebranded the company, changed the name, changed the colors, rebuilt the business model, fixed the pricing structure. And so we came up with something that we've in our experience and after the year of kind of user testing, we found that businesses really want. And that's what we've did. We have our plans are all flat. They're all month to month. They include tax returns at the end of the year. So there is no, you know, payout come that tax season. There's no hourly billing in our company. So any of our clients, they want to talk to us. They pick up the phone and talk to us because communication is one of the most important things when you're running a business.
Absolutely. If
you had a CFO, you should be able to talk to your CFO anytime. It's the way I look at it.
That's great wisdom there and, you know, great opportunity for people, small and medium-sized businesses to look you up. Is most of your business in California or are you pretty much national?
No, yeah, we're national. Obviously, we have some local business, but we have clients all over the country. So that's not really a problem. It's not a problem for us. So, you know, the goal for us is to really be as beneficial as possible. We didn't come in here saying, let's make something so we can make a lot of money. It was, let's make something that can make an impact and that can help companies be successful as opposed to fail.
So it's greenledgercpa.com. Is there an 800 number or something like that? They can go to the website and find it, or do you have an 800 number?
Yeah, greenledgercpa.com. You can see it's really clear right up front what we do. And there's a, you know, pricing page on there that explains, you know, how we build that model. And there's a contact form that they can schedule a time to speak with me. If somebody wants to call me, they can. My number is 760-452-0784. And people can also email me. It's just erik@greenledgercpa.com.
Great.
I like the concept so much.
Streamline in accounting, huh, Chris?
Well, you know, and it's funny, because I'm an old guy. Well, there have been so few innovations or changes in how service industry to the businesses has worked in the last 40 years. It's great to see somebody saying, you know, we ought to do this different. And it's such a repeat. Insurance agents do the same stuff they did 40 years ago, and it's time to do something, you know, and do it different. I love the idea.
Yeah. Green Ledger CPA, breath of fresh air, you know, started by a very supportive wife and, United States Army veteran, combat veteran, Eric Casares. I can tell you this. We appreciate you. We appreciate your service. We appreciate the support your family gave you when you're off serving our country. And, you know, the time that you gave us today is extremely special. And we hope that somebody out there hears the message. And so very honored to have met you, Eric. Just to be sitting here with Chris Hager, Gold Star Father, and all the work that all of us are doing to help continue the mission is what inspires me. So thank you, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on, and I really appreciate what you guys are doing with, with Green Zone Heroes and the podcast and all the other people that have been on and that are going to be on in the future. This is definitely a good space and good stories that should be heard and that should be told.
They should be. It is important to bridge the gap. As we said, population at peace, military at war, we got to bridge the gap, bring folks together.
Can't wait to see you in Orlando, man, next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
God bless you.
Thank you, Eric.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
I got to say, Chris, Eric has a great spirit. And I love the fact that he pointed out the support system back home and how important that was to the mission of serving our country.
The nonchalant way that he spoke about what we know was incredibly serious work as special forces and all.
Dive school, yeah.
But do you know how little ego was any of that? It was so matter of fact. And now he knows, let's put it to work. I love it. It was spectacular.
What was interesting about, you know, Eric, when I first met him in Dallas was, you know, they talk about the quiet professionals, you know, those elite soldiers. And that's how he operated when I met him. It, you know, he went around, but, you know, there was a presence there, but he did his thing and did it well. So I just got to thank everybody for listening to Straight Outta Combat Radio. And thank you, Chris, for being my co-host. And I want everybody to stay tuned for our next Proudly American, Unapologetically Patriotic radio show. And I want everybody to remember
that freedom is not free. God bless you, John.
God bless you, Chris. Thank you.
Before they burn it down.